outside your window. Maybe a real piece of work these days, but here on Posha Recaps, we're making everything super with Peacemaker coverage here on the Everything is Super Posha Recaps podcast, talking about episodes 5 and 6 of Peacemaker Season 1, Monkey Dory and Myrn After Reading. I am Josh Wigler. I am joined here by a man that I assume the butterfly living in Myrn's head would also have found an acceptable host, considering how bad of a person he is, Kevin Mahadeo.
I honestly think that butterfly would spend 30 seconds in my head and then be like, no, thank you, and leave.
Why? Because the thoughts that it would still be clinging to?
Exactly.
Like, I don't like
the
him.
Thoughts that this person had, and he's like, oh, I don't want any part of this.
Do you think that the butterfly would have felt like even Kevin was capable of change?
If I could change and you could change, yeah, everybody can change.
Yeah,
Rocky IV thrown out there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only 85% a piece of shit, Josh.
Yeah, you know? That other 15% is taking you places.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. We are catching up on 2 episodes of Peacemaker for this podcast. No podcast last week, as I am sure you noticed. That was a symptom of, or a consequence even, of some scheduling issues on my part, so I apologize for that. So today, we will talk about the last 2 episodes of Peacemaker, or the 2 most recent episodes. Luckily, it's not the last 2 episodes of Peacemaker. We still have 2 episodes left beyond this point. Even though, Kevin, I felt like the Myrn After Reading, the one from this week especially, felt like penultimate episode material of like the entire police department is now been taken over by butterflies. Rest in peace, Detective Song, I guess, right? Because she's technically, we hear from Myrn that like, the butterflies take over the people, that, yeah, they still have access to their memories and stuff, but they are dead. So RIP Detective Song and Detective Fitz and Captain Locke, who I'm not so sad to have lost.
I have questions about that guy. I still don't fully know what his deal is. I thought he was a butterfly from how he acted, but apparently no, he was not. He was just a sociopath, I guess, that Myrn knew.
Yeah.
Real weird.
Yeah. So lots and lots of questions still as to the true nature of the butterflies. I think, you know, we get some answers in this episode. It seems like everybody on, what are we calling them now? The 11th Street Kids. Do we officially have a name for our
name,
group?
Right? That's their jam. That's what they reppin'.
Yeah. All
that was.
All of the 11th Street Kids, with the exceptions of Peacemaker and Vigilante, know that Myrn is a butterfly. Myrn has convinced all of them. Harcourt seems to think so. Adebayo thinks so as well. Perhaps even Dyebeard, though he is trying his best not to hear anything about the fact that Myrn is a butterfly. All seem to trust Myrn's account of what the butterflies are, and that Myrn is effectively a butterfly who is rebelling against the Goth butterfly, that is sort of like Queen Butterfly, and is trying to do all sorts of evil butterfly shenanigans. But do we buy that? I think it's something that we should talk about in this episode of the podcast. On top of all of that, with the butterflies descending upon the storyline here, we also have the White Dragon is fully armed up. Robert Patrick is ready to go, and he has killing Peacemaker as the number one priority on his to-do list, Kevin. So, yeah, we're in a pretty dangerous spot heading into the final 2 episodes of Peacemaker Season 1, at the very least.
Well, he already checked off the other stuff on his to-do list with, you know, going home and finding a white supremacist, I guess, to take care of those needs. And now it's kill Peacemaker, and then one must assume genocide.
Yeah.
His to-do list pretty packed with things that need accomplishing, I suppose. Man,
yes.
I hope that guy gets shot in the face.
Who, Robert Patrick?
Not Robert Patrick, the author, but yes, the White Dragon character.
Well, I was thinking about
I hope
this.
The best for Robert Patrick, the person.
Sure, absolutely. I was thinking about all of the butterflies that have invaded and thinking about Augie, and is he inevitably going to get butterflied out? And I kind of hope not, because I feel like he needs to be maybe at the very end if they want to like have a butterfly sneak into his head and then Peacemaker pops his brain. That could be very satisfying. And also there's like a utilitarian aspect to why Peacemaker would have to do that. But I feel like we need to get the actual confrontation between Chris and Augie. And the other thing about that is I feel like if anyone is protected against getting infiltrated via the face mouth by Butterfly Kevin, it's probably the guy that has like a full-on, completely head-encompassing helmet, such as the White Dragon. So I think he seems to be on the board safest from butterfly infiltration, second only perhaps to Vigilante if Vigilante's wearing his mask.
If he's wearing his mask, which he's not always want to do. So, but yeah. You know, once the mask is off, the butterflies won't even know that that's Vigilante, so they might just ignore him completely.
That's true. That's a very good point. And also, hopefully, Peacemaker has some kind of helmet that has like a mouth guard that he will ultimately wear at some point in time.
Do you also think that Vigilante's visor is like his prescription? Because he definitely is a type who's wearing his glasses all the time, and like you need that, and especially since he's a sharpshooter. So I have to imagine his visor is prescription. That's something that's just been on my mind as I've been watching.
I think it's worth having on your mind, and I think that you gotta be right. Unless he's got the glasses on underneath, and it seems like a pretty snug fit. I feel like he's probably all right.
Yeah. I also feel like, as two guys who wear glasses, we've been in situations where we have to put something over them, and it's incredibly uncomfortable. I don't like it.
I think you and I could both attest that the glasses and mask combo is a challenging one.
Extremely challenging.
But, you know, tiny violin stuff. What are you going to do? So we've got a lot of Peacemaker to talk about. Of course, both of us have been very busy in the podcasting minds. Plenty of podcasts that we've both been putting out here in the post-show recaps universe. One that I want to shout out specifically is Kevin's patron-only podcast, YA, the Harry Potter podcast. Has happened, Kevin. Yourself, Melissa Woodward, Brooklyn Zed, all three of you have returned to Hogwarts for a fairly epic run through of the entire Harry Potter series for the patrons of Post Show Recaps. We made the first episode of that free to listen to in the main feed. The rest of them are going to be patron only. Do you want to give a shout out to the Sorcerer's Stone recap that you guys just put out?
Oh my God. Yes. It was so much fun. We had such a great time talking about that film and going through it and the memories of watching it and now rewatching it and just like, babies, the babies, to quote Shredder. That part is so wild to see like the actors so young again. But that first one was so fun to watch and talk about. We had such a good time. If you're a Harry Potter fan, I definitely hope you sign up, you know, to check this out, because like we're having a blast, we're taking feedback, we're changing up what we normally do in that each movie we're covering over the course of 2 weeks. The first week the three of us are talking about the film, and then the second week we're bringing on a guest to talk about their Harry Potter experience, their feelings towards the franchise, their experience. And that part's especially fun. You know, we're about to record our first one of those. We have a guest from the Discord and a fellow patron coming on that we're bringing on here to talk about Harry Potter. And like it's so much fun, and it's nice to kind of be back in that world and talk about like why we're back and like how we're feeling about it, because we're not shying away from other stuff. And you know, we're shouting out a lot of LGBTQIA and trans charities to, you know, to help donate and support the cause there, and recommending other fantasy books by like, you know, people of color and minorities. Like it's really great. Like we are really excited about this, and that first one was such a great kickoff. So yeah, definitely giving a big shout out and plug, and I hope people join up for that.
Yeah, people who have been listening have loved what you're all doing, so that's really great. patreon.com/postrecaps at any level, and you will get access to the Harry Potter podcast that is being created for the patrons of Post Show Recaps. You could do a custom pledge if you want to just do $1 a month, and you will get access to these podcasts. So consider signing up. patreon.com/postshowrecaps to listen to the Harry Potter podcast, as well as the extra podcast that Kevin and I put out for the patrons of Post Show Recaps, where we are talking about X-Men every week. We are going to be talking about the X-Men episode Come to Apocalypse. Is that what it's called? I think
it's Come the Apocalypse.
Come the Apocalypse.
Not like come hither. Yeah, come yeah. to Apocalypse.
To me, come my along. Apocalypse. Yeah. So we're gonna be talking about that over at patreon.com/posterrecaps. You can go there, you can listen to the extra podcast for free on the website. If you want it in your podcatcher, you gotta sign up for the Patreon. So those are some plugs here. Right off the top. Kevin, two episodes of Peacemaker to cover in sort of a broad way, I think, today. We're not going to go scene by scene. I think we're just going to talk about the show and what it's been like over the last couple of weeks. I would love to just start with your overarching thoughts, not just on the advancement of the story and getting a little more clarity to some degree on what's going on with the butterflies and you know, which characters are on the board that we should be feeling especially threatened by, who are we feeling better about, but also the jokes. The copious amounts of jokes, just the vibe of Peacemaker. How have you been feeling over the course of 5 and 6?
Listen, I remember seeing, I think last week, that Peacemaker is the most popular show in the world right now. Like, it's just doing that well, and I support and believe it. It's just continued to be so engaging and entertaining. Like, it doesn't feel like there's been any down episode. Like, sometimes when you watch a show, you're like, all right, that was sort of like an episode that was like, eh, it was here, like, not filler, but almost there. And I haven't had that at all for this show so far. I will shout out the two things that slayed me in the episode 5. John Cena just freeze, like, almost like free association style listing people off was amazing.
Red Lion from Voltron.
You could see, like, the lines of, like, you could see how he went from person to person almost, which I thought was so great. And then the one from this week.
Drake, Kim Kardashian.
Kardashian, Khloe Kardashian.
Khloe Kardashian. And, like, what about Bill Cosby? He just got out. He's got some time.
Not Ariana Grande, no. She's too precious. Yeah. And then this week, when he called that little girl gender swapped Alfred E. Newman, I lost my freaking mind. Yeah. Like, that's such an esoteric reference, but, like, so spot on. That killed me. I continue to just adore the jokes. I continue to adore Vigilante. Eagly got to shine in episode 6.
Yeah.
Eagly is hardcore. Loved it. There's just everything about the show I've been enjoying so much. John Cena can play the piano. What the
hell? Can he? Was that actually him?
I looked it up, Josh. I looked it up. He actually plays the piano.
Is that right?
James Gunn actually tweeted out how this came about, how he found out that John Cena plays the piano. It's wild. It is 100% him. No double. John Cena can actually play. Amazing. Wow. This man is incredible. I have even more of a crush on him now. Your follower, John Cena.
My Twitter follower, John Cena, tickling the keys, right? That's what we say. Just tickling the keys.
I don't think we do, Josh.
On the piano when we're tickling the keys. What is this? From James Gunn saying, while we were shooting the Suicide Squad in Panama, I got word my dog of nearly 17 years was about to pass away. It was one of the saddest days of my life. I decided to fly home for a day to be with him. I sat in the hotel lobby bar with John waiting to be taken to the airport. John got up and sat at the grand piano and played the most beautiful rendition of the Pixies' Where Is My Mind. It crushed me and yet soothed me, and everyone around me was crying. I wanted to capture some semblance of that moment with this song. That's really, really beautiful. And I think, a really just a real testament to how personal James Gunn is as a filmmaker and how much of himself he wants to put into the stories that he tells, for that to be the impetus behind the piano piece that we get from Peacemaker at the end of episode 6. And also that it's, you know, it's actually mirroring a moment where John Cena, like, broke/restored Gunn's heart. And to have that here, that's really cool. I didn't know that. Really, really, really compelling.
The show's
stuff.
Amazing.
The show is really, really, really good. It's very funny. I really loved episode 5, Monkey Dory, and the fact that so much of that episode was about finally getting these people kind of on the same page, that they have this mission that for once doesn't go awry in pretty much any way. Like, they have to go through, they're trying to find, like the source of the fluid, the factory where we come to find out that everybody is a butterfly here. And Peacemaker's just ruthlessly immediately shotgunning people in the head. And Autobio is running up and just tapping them long after they're dead. You don't have to shoot anybody. They're already dead. But the biggest obstacle that they fight is Charlie the gorilla.
I knew he was going to come back somehow.
They're like, our savior, Charlie the gorilla, that they have to fight Charlie the gorilla. And that's almost pretty bad. But Economos comes and saves the day and chainsaws Charlie to death. I guess it would have been cooler if he came in with the chainsaw and said, Vigilante, bro, use this. And I would have said, thanks, bro. Because I said it before. He's just ripping off my idea.
It's just like he just took my idea. Oh, my God. What a great... Just yeah. Everything about it. And just them singing in the car afterwards. Like, everything was so good with that. Harcourt taking the picture and sending it. It really was exactly what we needed. So that in this episode, the next one in 6, when they just all get almost torn apart, it's that much more devastating. Yeah. It really is, like, just also great storytelling to do that. But damn, oh damn, that previous episode too, episode 5, like, what a thrill ride. Yeah, Charlie talking a la Caesar from Rise of the Planet of the Apes, mm-hmm. and then immediately getting killed, though.
Yeah.
Brutal.
Yeah. I don't know that I had Gorilla gets chainsawed through the heart on my Peacemaker bingo card. And yet, that's on me.
Yeah, you should have expected that. What show do you think you're watching?
I'm not watching the right show, obviously. But I loved it. I thought it was a really good episode. I thought that, you know, getting to see, like, more of what Peacemaker has in his arsenal, and the fact that his helmets all do these different things, and getting to see another one, the X-ray vision, in an episode, no less, where he name checks Superman. Yes. I believe this is the one. What is he saying Superman's into? He's like, Superman's into butt stuff, basically. I think that's what he says.
I blacked out in that moment. I refuse to hear slander against Superman in any way or shape or form.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's fine. I just, the way that this show, and that it was able to get past the Warner Brothers DC censors of being able to effectively have Peacemaker, in his view, besmirching the honor of folks like Superman. You know, it seems like DC has laid off a little bit in terms of what they have allowed to be done in their name. In this episode too, in episode 6, Peacemaker's like, I haven't met Wonder Woman, but she was giving me eyes from across the room at a party.
Children is what he said that to. Mm-hmm. And then doesn't that kid respond like, nice, basically?
Yeah, he goes, nice. Nice. You know,
God, the show's great.
Loves it. So yeah, I think they've been doing a lot of really funny stuff, but I think that the emotional beats have been working really well as well. I think about I obviously watched the episode when it came out the other week, but I've been thinking about ever since. My favorite moment from that is when they're in the car on the way back and they're listening to the song that, you know, they started listening to at the very end of their drive to the factory, but they turned the car off right before the song got anywhere, and they're rocking out to it in the van, and Harcourt has had this huge, like, change of heart towards everybody, and she's the one who takes the picture, and just the look on her face and just the smile on her face, as, you know, she seems to be in need of some friends as much as anybody else in this van. That moment for me of Jennifer Holland as who we come to know as Amelia Harcourt in this past episode was really, really, really lovely. And I just think it's one of those things that James Gunn does so well. This, like, found family idea that is often a hallmark of his work across now this show, but of course his movies and Guardians of the Galaxy as well.
Yeah, you got this great stuff between those moments. You also have, I think, it's so good because it is building this found family. It's these people finding each other, but still not fully trustworthy all the way, right? Like, because even in that episode, you had
Autobio.
Oh my God, Autobio, yeah. Leota, hiding the journal underneath, like, you know, in his oh my God, I can't talk today. His trailer. And like that is devastating in and of itself, right? Like all these little moments that I think they're being bonded, but like these twists keep happening. And then of course, at the very end of that episode, finding out that Mern is in fact a butterfly, like it's just, it's crazy. But it's so good because we're already so invested in the bonds that these characters have made in this episode and have been making throughout, you know, slowly every step of the way. It's great storytelling. It's truly great storytelling.
Yeah. Beyond that, yeah, there's this tension that's still existing within the group of Adebayo being the person who Chris feels the most connected to as a friend. And she's doing this thing that's on the orders of her mother. Is that his diary or is it a total fabrication? Kevin?
Total fabrication. Yeah. I think that was what Waller said in that first episode, was that it was like a fabricated journal that they wanted to hide. I think Waller probably has it out for Peacemaker for probably many, many reasons. Because one, it's Amanda Waller. So I think that's like supposed to be planted to like really emphasize like what type of person he is and like keep him on the outside. Which, you know, like, come on. Like, I know it's your mom.
Very dirty. Like, very dirty. well, I think that she's struggling with her place in this world. And it's really sad that that comes after having such a great day at the proverbial office and feeling like she's gotten closer to Peacemaker. She even says to him, like, you put up the Peacemaker front because you don't want people to like you. But if you were just Chris, like, people would like you. Like, you're not half bad. And yet she goes ahead and does this. And beyond that, what we get in episode 6 is which I don't think is for me anyway, like a major surprise that Mern is you know, a good guy butterfly, at least as it currently stands, that he's sort of the lone dissenter to the Goth butterflies' plan to dominate Earth, that's not why the butterflies were here in the first place. And now we come to find out that that's what the butterflies are going to be here to do at Goth's command. And that Adebayo finds this out, and we find out that Harcourt knew and Economos knew as well, but they're all still keeping Peacemaker and, less importantly, Vigilante on the outside of the Circle of Trust. And so they have not fully solidified here yet. They are still in positions, Kevin, where they're just not trusting each other all the way.
And it just sucks because, like, poor Peacemaker, right? You can see it in his eyes when Adebayo is just, like, ignoring him, not even meeting his eye, like just completely, like, I feel like a lot of us have been there when we've been like upset or angry and the person's just not even gonna look at you, and it just makes you more upset and like heartbroken. That scene was wonderfully well acted, I thought, from episode 6. And there's just a lot happening that is so engaging, and it just feels like a lot happened in episode 6 too. And just like you said, it felt like a penultimate episode, and not just like them setting up like the butterflies and like police, but just all that stuff coming together, like reveals, information, the raid on the house. Like, so much happened in that episode that it is almost like shocking, but at the same time, like, so delightful that there's still two to go. So yeah, it's also we know certain things, I will say, right? Like, we know that the butterflies are not going to tear the flesh off of people and eat it. We know that they're not going to lay xenomorph babies inside of people. We know that they don't need to get back to their home planet. So there's certain things we know that they're not here to do, but we don't know everything. We don't know, you know, their real, real plans. So it could be any one of the fictional alien featured movies, or it could be the plot of Porky's. Vigilante is right in that they didn't ask the butterfly that, so they don't know. And it could just be for a movie night, you know?
I'm kind of sad that the Goth butterfly has ended up being a villain. I loved this world that I was living in for a minute of the Goth butterfly loving getting contact high with Peacemaker and Eagly and just having the best time. But no, Queen Alien for sure. Unless you think that there's a reversal coming. You know, we already have the reversal on Mern. Are we in for like the double blind? Like, are we going to get ourselves into a position, Kevin, where we find out that Mern is secretly King Butterfly and the queen and the rest of these butterflies are out for justice against Mern for like legitimate reasons? Or do you think that it's going to be fairly straightforward in terms of the narrative moving forward?
I don't know. It might be fairly straightforward, but, you know, you look at Guardians and there's mostly straightforward stuff, but even in its straightforwardness, there's like interesting drama, right? Like Ego Living Planet wants to, you know, take over the galaxy, sure, but there's the interpersonal drama that made that much more interesting by having it be his dad. So I think there's maybe some levels that's still there that needs to be peeled back. The onion and or parfait still has some layers underneath, I think, still.
Now I want a parfait.
Everybody likes a parfait.
Do you like a parfait? Was that speaking to you once upon a time?
I think when I actually saw that movie, I didn't know what a parfait was. So that one, I had to go look that up and be like, oh, okay. Yeah. And I think I got it in college for the first time. I had a parfait at one of the Union Hall's shops that they have, you know.
Crunchy layers.
The fruity layers, not as much for me, right? Like the crunchy layers and obviously the sweeter layers, all about it. Because
you don't like a
fruit? I'm a child.
You don't like a fruit?
I'm a child. I don't like fruits in my ice cream. When I go to like Menchie's or 16 Handles or any sort of like Frovio place, I put like gummy bears and Reese's Pieces in mine. That's how I run.
I would be really nervous to find out what Peacemaker's parfait order would be, considering the ingredients used in the Peace Train. Yak butter?
I like that he was so convinced, like, it's good! He takes a drink.
That was an incredible moment from Danielle Brooks when she takes the drink. She needs to spit it out, but then she goes in and Eagly's using the bathroom. Yeah, it's just like the double grossness is just it's just too much. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to start talking about Detective Song, where all of that has gone and a lot of the violence we get into here in episode 6. Well, we'll do that on the other side of this commercial break. Stay tuned. All right, Kevin, I'm sad that this is how Detective Song's story, if not all the way ends, at least partly ends. We are told in this episode from Myrn that the butterflies, when they install themselves into people's brains, kill the person. And Myrn, you know, is like, I own that I've killed Myrn. I picked the worst person I possibly could, and even he could have been changed, and I still have some of his memories. And so hearing that, if we take that fully at face value, means that when Detective Song is infiltrated by the Goth butterfly, she's dead. And I don't know, I'm just kind of bummed that she doesn't get to see things through with Augie Smith, especially how horrible the White Dragon had been to her throughout their time together in the show thus far. That I do have to say, I don't know if this is like a major critique against the show or not, but this was a moment that left me feeling a little unsatisfied that this is the direction we're taking the Detective Song story in, and you know, a way to integrate maybe the White Dragon storyline into the greater butterfly situation as well. I don't know. I want justice for Detective Song, and I feel like now we're never going to get that. I was bummed. I don't know if you were bummed.
I was shocked. Detective Song Swan Song was this episode. For sure. And you had like, what is it that she says, where it's just like, just enjoy this moment, basically, the when she tries to smile. But I was shocked, like, when it happened. I was just like, oh shit, like, I literally just like had to exclaim out loud because I did not see it coming at all. And it is surprising. Song and Fitz are great characters, and I thought they were really interesting and their story was great, but we knew it had to intersect in other ways coming up. This was a very unexpected thing, but I don't think it's a bad thing. I do think, you know, Song and Fitz both, and Song especially, has been getting shit from the White Dragon, from Augie, but they,
oh, you mean Jimmy Fallon, aka Blake Shelton. Sorry, running out of white guys.
I mean, yeah, it's hard to think of very generic looking white guys like that. So funny. They're dime a dozen, but they're also forgettable.
Yeah, it's so funny.
I do like, no, that's for, what was it, like a dog took a crap in my head or whatever?
Yeah, oh yeah, it's that's actually translates to a donkey took a shit on my hair. Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. So like they had the trading barbs, right? But I think for Augie especially, I don't necessarily think it needs to be Song who does it. I do think there'll probably be an encounter, and Song will probably get to like at least smack him around a little bit as a butterfly. But I do think, like, as a viewer, I just want someone to do something to Augie, right? Like, and Peacemaker is the most logical one because it's his dad. So I think there'll be some stuff, but I think the justice and catharsis is going to come in other ways, which I'm okay with, as long as he gets something.
Yeah.
Eventually. I don't necessarily need it immediately. Like, if you got a story to play out, let it play out. But that guy got some comeuppance coming his way.
Yeah. Part of me, like, I have not fully reconciled this within my own enjoyment of the show, where I don't know where the value of the shock, because I was certainly very shocked when Vigilante fell and the glass jar broke and Goff was free. You know, it was not a far leap, and it happens very quickly. We're like, oh, this is bad for Detective Song. Are they actually going to? Okay, they're actually doing it. You know, the butterfly flies into her face and it's done. And so it was really, really, really shocking. But I don't know yet where I'm at on the balance between that was really effectively shocking and, you know, took me off guard versus is that satisfying? I don't know. Hard for me to know exactly where I land on all of that. I'll say if it's giving Annie Chang, who plays Sophie Song, an opportunity to kind of do Queen Alien stuff for the final couple of episodes. We already see some of this. I love her line. It's like, man, it really is hard to, you know, every time you get a new brain, like, it's hard to remember how you're supposed to smile. You know,
how that plays out amongst the group was hilarious.
Yeah,
creepy-ass smiles all around.
That big hallway walk by the end of the episode where they're all trying to figure out how to smile was fun. So I'm definitely, you know, it did not dampen my enjoyment to any degree where I'm not still excited about the show and still enjoying the show. But it did bum me out in a way where, I don't know, I need to see how they land Augie's story specifically. And I don't know if it's super satisfying to me to have Peacemaker be the one who kills him, Kevin, because we get this really sad moment from Peacemaker in this episode where he tells Harcourt, who has engraved the dove into his gun, albeit with the tail pointing in the wrong direction, says it wasn't the lack of a dove on my gun that stopped me from killing people. I don't want to kill people anymore. Peacemaker doesn't want to kill. He's fine shooting aliens. He's got no issue killing aliens, especially the little creepy bug ones. But he doesn't want to kill people. And I think even if he has to kill a bug-infested version of his dad, isn't that not still going to be like pretty horrible for him to have to endure? Aren't we rooting for Peacemaker to be somebody who doesn't just have to kill people? That's what he wants, Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he doesn't have to kill him. Just do something bad to him. That works too. Like I said, there's ways to take care of someone like Augie without having to necessarily kill him. So that'd be fine. I wouldn't be against that at all. I want the story to play out the way it's going to play out. And I'm interested in seeing that. I do think there's such a connection to Peacemaker that it could be that maybe he isn't capable of killing his dad, right? And that's when Goff Butterfly or Song can take care of it. There are ways to pull this off. There are ways to do it that I think are going to be satisfying. I get what you're saying about the shock of the moment and you know how you ultimately feel about it. I'm maybe like less there than you are. And you know, you're a guy who's watched every season of The Walking Dead, so this being a thing is actually kind of surprising because
care about a quality show killing characters off without any warning. I don't seem to care about a low quality show killing characters off without any warning.
Yeah, exactly. You've seen it done so many times. And you've continued with that one. I'm curious to see how it plays out, but I do think the benefit of what happens is giving a Song like a chance to like stretch those acting skills, right? To have you said it was Amy Chan or Annie Chan?
Annie Chang. Yep.
Annie Chang, a chance to stretch acting muscles. And we saw that, right? Like a very different vibe already with the way the character is going to be portrayed because it's like a little bit stiffer. It's a little more alien. So I think that's fun for any actor to be able to do as well, is to be able to like kind of like do something different than you had been doing to showcase your range. So I think one way or another, we're getting good stuff from Song still. It's just obviously going to be different. But I'm, again, benefit of the doubt to James Gunn, has not led me astray yet. So I'll let it go and see how it works ultimately.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that this is going to work out in a way that's really, really satisfying. I guess maybe one of the questions I do have, it feels like we are building towards that point in the horror movie where everybody has to, like, the good guys have to build the barricade and fight really hard against the remaining zombies, and maybe make alliances with certain enemies. I'm wondering, you know, is there any sort of temporary, the friend, like the enemy of my enemy is my friend type stuff between Peacemaker and White Dragon, even as we're pushing into the end, which I would hate. I would really not
would
like
hate that.
That
would be bad. That would almost break the show for me.
But I do think, like, you know, how pervasive and like widespread throughout the city will the butterfly invasion be? And what's it going to look like as everybody's like kind of fighting back against that? But the main point that I'm driving at is Peacemaker going to be the butterfly show, or is Peacemaker season one the butterfly show? And so I'm a little curious to know how they're gonna land this thing ultimately.
I'm also curious about that, like how self-contained is what they're doing. I mean, I think James Gunn probably approached it with the idea of like telling a complete story as much as he can, because there was no guarantee of a season two. Seems like there's going to be a season two after the reception at this point of the show. So that'll be a curiosity, because it's already done. So would they have tacked on something else? Would they have filmed something in chance of there being a season two and then just like swapped in the ending? I don't necessarily think they have to wrap up the White Dragon stuff here, and you could save that for a season two situation. But it probably, because of how it was filmed and done, I think it'll interlace pretty well with this. So I don't know. It's really tough to say. It all depends on like how much James Gunn wanted to gamble with the idea of being able to continue a story.
Yeah. A new development that has happened since last we talked, Peacemaker, is the arrival of the Casper Locke character. Temporarily Captain Locke, now Butterfly Locke, who is just like this sort of sick psychopath who gets the mid-credit scene in episode 6 of just trying to, he doesn't even have the butterfly and he's trying to practice human emotion in that moment. He's played by actor Christopher Heyerdahl. Kevin, do you recognize this guy from anything?
I mean, I recognize his face immediately, but I couldn't pinpoint where I know him from. But he was definitely like, I saw him and I was like, oh, it's this guy.
Yeah. Does the name Marcus Volturi ring a bell by any chance?
Oh, yes, it does. I know exactly who it is now. Holy shit.
Who is this
guy? He is
from
Twilight. He is one of the three Volturi from Twilight, along with, I believe, Cassius is the other one, which that guy sucks.
Uh-huh.
And Arrow, played by Michael Sheen.
Yeah.
Marcus has one of the best deaths, well, quote-unquote deaths in the series. He's just old as shit, and he just wants to die. And literally, in the final Twilight movie, he's just being charged from both sides by these two others. And he just puts his arm out and just goes, finally, and then lets himself get torn in half. And it's awesome.
That's incredible. I hope that whatever happens to Locke is competitive with the sound of that death scene. I feel like Mern versus Locke feels like a showdown that we'll get. This was a former colleague of Mern's, who we see is like a ruthlessly bad person. And now that he is a ruthlessly bad person with a butterfly who wants to conquer Earth kicking around in his head, I feel like this character is still going to be pretty nasty. I do think that this is one of the things, though, where like I really liked this character as like a sort of late adversary here in the season. And I kind of wanted to see a little bit more about what that's going to look like with this guy specifically. And now that he's going to be Butterfly Locke, is he going to be a little less subdued, or is he going to still have some of those character traits? I'm not entirely sure, but I look forward to watching him get ripped apart by two people that are running at him from either side. Hopefully Peacemaker and Vigilante.
With a chainsaw.
With a chainsaw.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing, because now that we know, like, you know, Mern is like, he's like, I tried to pick the worst person possible. You know, your friends say a lot about you. And the fact that Mern had this guy as like an ally, as someone he, you know, knew and that trusts him, says a lot about what type of person Mern used to be. Yeah. So evidence there that like the probably not a great person overall. But I am interested to see how it plays out. I definitely think he's going to have a confrontation with Mern. I think we're going to see that come to pass for sure. Yeah, it's a lot of stuff again that they're setting up for these last two episodes that are like, I think, cool. Who's Eagly going to fight? That's the big question, because we know that Eagly is hardcore and Eagly can take down some people. So I'm curious to see who Eagly's going to go mono. Maybe the cow. Maybe Eagly's going to fight the cow.
Yeah, so what do we think is this cow? We hear that they believe that there's this cow that's creating all of the butterfly goo. What's this going to look like?
I don't want to know. Honestly, I don't want to know. I feel we could be heading into a situation very close to a comic book series I know that you like as well, Josh, of like a meat person.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like how that thing was shocking, like, I feel like that's where we're leading to, where we're going to see something just be like, oh, I don't like any of that.
Yeah.
Like, that's my prediction.
Hearing about the cow definitely has me at the edge of my seat. Yeah, like, we think there's a cow. There's definitely a cow out there that they're getting all this from. It's like, oh, gross. Yeah. So, and if it's one cow to rule them all, right? If it's one cow to mass produce this amber goo, it's gotta be a pretty big cow, you would think.
Probably the biggest. It's underground somewhere. Big old gross cow.
Yeah.
I mean, cow is just what they're calling it. Lord knows what this thing will look like.
I feel like very likely. Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, you know how every episode has a pun in its title. Mm-hmm. Well, the finale has a title that's very provocative for our current conversation. If you don't want to know what it is, maybe skip forward, hit the skip forward by 30 seconds button. Kevin, the finale of Peacemaker Season 1 is called It's Cow or Never. And we know that when these shows and when the Suicide Squad, it was Operation Starfish. It was a literal giant starfish alien. And this is Operation Butterfly, and they're literally butterflies. This cow is going to be some sort of gigantic, terrifying cow.
Some sort of mutant cow. I don't know what it is. I'm racking my brain right now trying to think of like what cow DC character exists, but it's not coming to mind.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I don't know what they're going to be pulling from for this one. So we'll see.
Oh, God. I'm unexcited for it, but also somehow very, very, very excited about it at the same time. I think that that's going to be great. I feel like there's been a very conspicuous lack of Judo Master recently. We know he got shot, but we know he survived getting shot. At least that's how they played it, right? Like, they played it kind of as a joke. But where have they put him? Did they put him somewhere? Is he going to be recovered by the time we get into these final two episodes here? And then the other thing that's on my mind still is that Judo Master was the one who was, right before he was shot, was going to say something that seemed like a counter argument about the perception of the butterflies. But he's been in league with the Goth butterfly, which is why this is the thing that's sort of hanging out there right now, Kevin, that's making me wonder, is Mern's story fully on the level, or is Judo Master going to come back into the proceedings at point and reveal that maybe the Goth butterfly is, you know, got something against Mern specifically because Mern has something nefarious cooking right now. I just feel like Judo Master holds a piece of this puzzle that is going to be really, really critical whenever he gets back into the story.
I mean, I think at the key moment, Judo Master will pop out from the trapdoor underneath the floor to make a reveal and then jump on Peacemaker's shoulder like Rocket Raccoon and Groot.
So Judo Master's apparently all over the credits if you know where to look for him. I watched the credits so many times with the intent of spotting Judo Master, and I've never been able to find him.
Judo Master is in there beyond popping out from the trap door?
That's what they say. Yeah, that he's secretly in the credit sequence multiple times. I haven't been able to find him with my eyes.
Okay, well, now I got a weird wall. Where's Waldo this next time I watch?
I have to trust the internet here. I just haven't
it's
been able to see it myself.
It's a dangerous thing to do, but okay.
I know. It's not my favorite thing to do, but it is a thing.
It sounds like something where you do the old trick of, like, you let two, like, pigs loose into a building and you paint the numbers 1 on and 3 on them. And then everyone's then spending the rest of the day looking for number 2. That feels like that's what that is.
Just yeah.
Setting you up to go crazy.
I'm going to go nuts. But how much crazier can I get at this point? Phil,
you want to get nuts?
Let's get nuts. But I feel like Judo Master is going to be important in the end. And if not, then I'm going to feel like that's a little bit of a thing that was left hanging out there in the breeze.
Agreed.
What else from these two episodes stands out to you, Kevin? Is something we haven't even either we haven't hit on yet, haven't hit on enough, whether it's a joke, a story point, something.
Yeah,
like
I mean, I wrote this down. So we have you with the sad eyes, and by the way, this is how they're credited in the credits. This is how these kids are credited: Sad Eyes, Chubbs, Gender Swapped Alfred E. Newman, Urkel, Canadian Tuxedo, Rubik's Cube Champion 2025, and Skinny Arms.
Yeah.
Those are the kids in the classroom. I thought that was fantastic.
That's very good.
Love that, as I mentioned. I love that Adrian Knox in that annoying way, which I also do at times, where you do the, like, da 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 da. You know, like, yeah. Everyone does that. I thought that was really funny.
Also, it should have been a real early tell that Casper Locke was a psychopath, because he just, like, was knocking on the window rather than knocking on the door
when he came to meet Mern. Just like, who does that door right there?
And he's a butterfly, and he understands human behavior better.
The vigilante answering the phone call from Mern and just being like, who's vigilante? That's
vigilante.
I'm American.
Vigilante's phone etiquette. Amazing. His phone etiquette is wild to me. First of all, the constant use of the merman emoji, because it just leaves a lot up to interpretation.
Yes.
Is very funny and ridiculous. They're like, it's meaningless. I know. there's that. The way he answers the phone. And also just the severe decision to just so quickly abandon Chris's phone with all of those irreplaceable pictures of him and Eagly on it.
I felt that so deeply in my heart, where he's just like, I had a bunch of super cute pictures of Eagly on there. They're irreplaceable. That is my phone.
But what about the cloud?
Of my dog.
What about the cloud?
I don't use the cloud either. I don't use the cloud. I don't trust the cloud. He has a better excuse where he just doesn't even understand what it is, because he was locked in prison when the cloud became a thing even. But, like, I don't use the cloud. I don't need my phone connected to anything. Also, I'm an Android user, so, like, different cloud.
Yeah.
But, like, my phone is filled with pictures of Gus. If that went out the window, I'm literally gonna back up my phone today, because I watched this episode early.
Yeah.
And just be like, oh yeah, no, I gotta save these. I'll put them on my computer.
Yeah.
I can't lose these super cute pictures of Gus. So, Eagly just being a beast again, just Eagly is hardcore, just pecking at people. That was incredible. Just all around, just greatness in these episodes. Just phenomenal show, and I'm sad that I will have to wait for more now once it's done next week or 2 weeks.
I want more James Gunn DC material very, very, very badly. Yes. And it is a bummer that this is almost done. I mean, there's going to be hopefully some great DC material on the other side of this pretty soon. The Batman beckons, Kevin. The Batman is coming our way in a few weeks. It's wild. You seem unexcited about this.
My excitement has neutralized for internet reasons, I guess. So I'm still pumped about a Batman movie.
You're running around looking for Bat number 2.
I'm excited to see it. I will say the cast and the creative team have gotten me excited. I haven't seen this movie, so I don't know what it's really going to be like. But the marketing has left me wanting. The marketing, okay. I do not like. But I like the actual facts of the movie. I like. So I'm
are you excited,
excited that
it's a 3-hour Batman movie?
No, that's one of the things I'm talking about. That they felt like this was a thing they needed to release in, as if it's an exciting piece of news. To me, says a lot about what they think is positive about the film. This movie is giving me real, the marketing and PR of this movie is giving me real Suicide Squad vibes. Not the Suicide Squad, but Suicide Squad vibes. And yeah, that doesn't make me excited. It feels like when they're like originally when that story came out, where it's just like Robert Pattinson and Zoe Kravitz has set on the sex on the Batmobile. My response was like, good for both of them.
Yeah.
But now with everything else they've been doing, I'm like, man, is this like, did they release that on purpose? Because it's a rumor to like, is that like Jared Leto gave people rats as gifts like level? That's what it feels like. It's starting to feel like that's what they're doing. They're trying to hype this movie with these weird ass stories because they think it's cool the way that they think Jared Leto doing that weird shit was a cool way of getting people hyped for Suicide Squad. So yeah, the marketing machine has me just like, ugh, this is terrible. But again, the actual cast and creative team, I'm like, cool. I'm probably going to like the movie once I see it. But everything leading up has done very little for me.
Yeah, it's a three-hour Batman movie, and it looks really wild. And Paul Dano's Riddler is consistently mystifying to me as a concept, and I'm excited to see what that's all about. So
exactly, because I love Paul Dano, right? I love Paul, like, on paper, this is a great concept.
You can believe that Kevin and I are going to have thoughts on the Batman when the Batman swoops Batman. Into the Batman when the Batman swoops into town in just a few weeks. We'll definitely have some Batman coverage for all of y'all. But first, we got to get through Peacemaker. Next week is Stop Dragging My Heart Around. It's Dragon like the Beast.
Okay, well, then I guess White Dragon will play a role in this show, in this season.
Well, they set him up in a big way at the end of this episode, and I just want to watch that man die, is definitely how I feel about that. So we'll see if that's going to come our way when Peacemaker returns next week. Next week, we'll be back in the scene-by-scene mode, as we'll just have the one episode to talk about. Lots to catch up on in this week's podcast. If you want more from me and Kevin, we've got the X-Men podcast available for you at patreon.com/postshowrecaps. You could just go there, hit play on the extra podcast that appears on patreon.com/postshowrecaps. If you want to listen to it even more conveniently, sign up for the Post Show Recaps Patreon at patreon.com/postshowrecaps to get exclusive podcasts sent directly to your podcatcher of choice, including the Harry Potter podcast that Kevin and Zed and Melissa are doing. If you want more Kevin specifically, follow that guy. He's on the Twitter bots at Kev Mahadeo. Kevin, you tweeting anything interesting lately? I'm not checking out Twitter that much anymore, so I don't know if you've got anything fun going on.
I think I tweeted about The After Party, a show on Apple TV Plus, which I believe PSR is going to be covering.
As this podcast is hitting your feeds, I recommend you check out the Post Show Recaps Binge Show Recaps podcast feed, which houses all of our streaming service coverage, including our coverage of The After Party, the Apple TV Plus show. It's a comedy whodunit murder mystery, featuring several amazing actors and comedians, including Sam Richardson, Ben Schwartz, Alana Glazer is in it. Dave Franco is rather memorably
Tiffany
in it.
Haddish,
Tiffany Haddish.
Tiffany Haddish is out of control.
It's out of control. The pedigree is great. It's Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, responsible for Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, are responsible for this show. Every episode is directed by Chris Miller. And we are covering it here on Post Show Recaps. The first episode recap is currently up. You can listen to that in our Binge Show Recaps feed at postshowrecaps.com/binge is the RSS link for that if you want to catch that feed. And all week long, we will have a brand new podcast every day on The After Party as we are catching up with it. There are four episodes out right now. The fifth episode comes out this week, so we will hit it every single weekday this week, and then we will be caught up for the weekly After Party. It's myself, Jess Sterling, that other Ariel, chief film critic, alongside Grace Leader here on Post Show Recaps. A really fun podcast for a really fun show. I recommend you check that out. Kevin, you've been enjoying The After Party.
I've been loving it. We blitzed the first three episodes because they were dropped all at once on Apple TV. Absolutely loved it. I was like, this was a show I was anticipating. I saw a trailer for it that got served to me. And even though I don't normally do trailers, that's mostly about things that I already know about. I did not know about The After Party. The trailer hooked me from the cast, and then we started watching it, and the show was just great. I didn't know it was like, Lord and Miller, and specifically Miller, who did this, but like that's already like such a high vote. I think those two especially, that they can do no wrong, from Clone High to Lego Batman to obviously Spider-Verse, they're just extremely talented, and that's being showcased again here in the after party. So there's that. I don't think I've tweeted about it, but I Josh, we were talking about it, and I'll give it a shout out. I blitzed all of Reacher.
Yeah.
The Reacher Amazon Prime show. I really enjoyed it. Did not seem like this would be a show I would like, but like, holy crap.
It doesn't strike me
I?
As a show you would like either. So yeah. it's a pretty big endorsement that you were a fan of Reacher.
It was really engaging. I thought the cast was phenomenal. The guy that casts him, holy shit, he's a giant. He is, as I think my fiance put it, like, it's so hard to get a character like that or a person like that who, like, is that big, that jacked, and, like, not have them also be, like, kind of doofy, like, dumb-ish, you know, especially, like, just looking in a way. Not, you know what I'm trying to say, right? Like, just, like, some people have, like, but he is handsome, but also, as they say in the show itself, like, he has kind eyes, and I think it's so well cast in that way. And the mystery of it, like, had me interested. I was interested in the mystery. I thought it was paced out the information really well. I like I said, not a show I would have thought would have been for me, but it was very engaging to the point that, like, normally I planned on having it as just background while I did other stuff. I didn't do anything. I couldn't, like, I didn't want to look at my phone. I didn't want to, like, read other stuff. I was like, nope, I'm engaged. I have to pay attention. And I was glad to do so for that show. So
some superhero,
shout out Jack Reacher.
A superhero tie-in with Jack Reacher. Alan Ritchson, who plays the titular Jack Reacher, taking over the role from Tom Cruise in the Reacher movies, which was controversial because Tom Cruise is not as tall and big as Jack Reacher is supposed to be in the Jack Reacher books. Alan Ritchson obviously is. Alan Ritchson had previously appeared in the DC Universe, Kevin. Did you know
this?
Titans, Supergirl, and Legend of Tomorrow as well. He was Aquaman on Smallville, but he's also been in Titans, Supergirl, and Legends of Tomorrow as a Hawk of Hawk and Dove.
Oh, snap. I did not know that. Good for him. Good for him.
He was like all
Aquaman
over Titans.
In Smallville, I definitely remember. That's a wild one. That was one of the best things they did on Smallville, is the fact that they said Aquaman went to the University of Miami, which explains why he wears orange and green as a color scheme, because that is the University of Miami colors. Incredible. And I was like, yeah, it's a clever way of having him do that. I like that.
That's really, really fun.
I think Smallville did smart.
Wah, wah. All right. So check out all of those shows that we're talking about. No current podcast plans for Reacher. If there's demand for it, Kevin, maybe we could do a one-off. I'm going to watch it on your recommendation for sure. Okay. We'll be back next week with Stop Dragging My Heart Around. Kevin and I are now going to go and record the X-Men podcast, which you can listen to at patreon.com/postshowrecaps. Follow us on the Twitter bots at Kev Mahadeo, at Round Howard. Until next time, everybody. Bye.
Bye.